church, good to see you guys here this morning. When I was 14 years old, my family took a trip to New York City for a vacation. Okay, so we go to New York City. We're doing all the normal touristy things, seeing all the sights and everything. And the way we got around in New York was we took the subway, which was normal. And I remember one time, at one point, we were down at a subway station, and the subway train like pulls up, and the doors open, and you know all the people come off, and then it's our turn. And I remember my little sisters, they jump on, and my mom and dad, they jump on, and I'm getting ready to jump on the subway, and right then the door closes. Okay, and I remember as a 14-year-old kid, I mean, I'm like knocking on the window. I'm like, "Hey, mom, I think you forgot something." You know, I'm like, "Hello, I'm right here." And I remember the look, like the look of horror in my mom's face as I watched my family leave the station. And I remember that feeling of being like, "You know, I've never been like alone before like this as a 14-year-old kid." And I'm like, "I have all of New York City at my fingertips." It was awesome. It was a great feeling. It's like real life Home Alone 2 is really what it was. And we've all been there to an extent, maybe that not that exact situation. Maybe your parents haven't abandoned you in New York City before when you were a kid. But for them, they eventually came back, so it all worked out. But we've all been there before where we have tried to enter through a door and right before the door closes, okay? Think about, like, this happens all the time. Like, think about it. Have you ever been in a hotel where you got to get downstairs quick, and so you run to the elevator, and you see the elevator's open, then there's all, like, it just happens this way, where there's, like, nobody inside, and the door's shut, right? And you're like, "Oh, come on." What are you, like, pressing the button? And you know the elevator's just, like, right there on the other side of this door, but it's already made up its mind. It's going down without you, empty, okay? Or have you ever waited in line at Cedar Point or maybe here at the fair for a ride or something? I don't know. Where you been waiting in line, like at Cedar Point, you could wait in line for a couple hours, and then you get up there, and they're letting everybody kind of go on the ride, and then the person like shuts the gate right in front of you. It's like, "Oh no, we're full," and you're like, "Oh, so you got to wait for the other cycle." Or we've all done this, where we have tried to get to a store when you know the store is closing soon. You get what I'm saying? All right, you're like rushing. This just happened to me last night, actually. And so where you're going, and you run up to the door, and it's like the glass doors, and right when you pull into the parking lot, you see the people, like someone's messing with the door. You're like, "Oh, don't you do it. Don't you do it. I still got 2 minutes." You know, and you run up to the door, and they completely ignore you. They're like joking around. You see them in the store, and you're like, "Let me in. I just got to buy one thing." All right? It's frustrating, all right, when that stuff happens. Why? All right, because we are the ones on the outside. All right? There's nothing you could do about it. And so today we're going to look at something like this. Let me just tell you straight up. Today is going to be kind of a downer, okay? First and second service, we all left the service going, "Wow, I'm a terrible person. I'm walking away." Like I'm just saying, that's just kind of how it is, and that's probably exactly how the crowd felt when Jesus was telling this the things that we're going to be looking at today. But today we're going to look at a time where Jesus is addressing a large crowd, which was nothing new. He's always addressing large crowds. And what he's going to do is he's going to warn them specifically about religion. And basically what he's going to tell us is that religion will get you to the door of heaven, but it won't get you through. Which is interesting, because I think most of us in this room, we view Jesus as like, you know, kind of like the ultimate religious guy, like the ultimate religious leader. But Jesus did not gravitate towards religious people. In fact, people who were nothing like Jesus actually liked Jesus. And guess what? Jesus liked them back. And so this kind of stuff happened all the time. And at this point in the story, we've looked at this, how Jesus, he's been traveling from town to town to town and village to village to village. He's been helping people. He's teaching people about what God is actually like. And Luke tells us that one day, Jesus was teaching in one of the synagogues on the Sabbath. And as he was there, there was a woman who had been disabled by a spirit for over 18 years, and she was bent over, and she could not straighten up at all. So I want you to kind of picture this in your mind. All right, here's this lady. She's bent over. She can't stand up straight. She's got this, like, physical condition. And just want to point out, she's been dealing with this and suffering with this for 18 years. And where's she at? She's in the synagogue. Right, kind of the equivalent, the Jewish equivalent of church. That's where she's at. Got no cars. She got to walk everywhere, even though she's dealing with this like physical condition. It's kind of funny because a lot of us, we're like the exact opposite. You know, like we wake up on a Sunday morning, you feel that little tickle in your throat. You're like, well, I'm out. I can't go. You know what I'm talking about? Like, church is done for me. Maybe next week, better luck next time. All right, can't help this feeling. You know, that type of thing. She doesn't do that. She is there. And she is learning about God. So that's her priority here. And this specific day, this particular day, she's at church, or what we'd call church, and she is listening to Jesus teach in the synagogue. They got a guest speaker, okay? Your favorite day, all right? Not the normal guy. You got a guest speaker in the house. And Jesus happens to be there, and there's a bunch of religious people this place would have been packed, and there's a bunch of religious people there who are watching Jesus closely. You know, they're against the back wall, like, I'm watching you. You know, they're leaning up like, okay, Jesus, what you got? And they're watching him. And when Jesus sees her, he called her out to her. He says, hey, lady, all right, you are free of your disability. Basically, he says, hey, I'm going to fix you right here, right now. And then he laid his hands on her, and instantly she was restored and she began to glorify God. Right, this doesn't happen like a few months ago or a few months later. Like, she started taking like physical therapy and started working it and started chiropractor thing. You know, like, it wasn't anything like that. All right, this wasn't like a couple hours later, like she took a pill or something. He's like, hey, take this medicine, this will fix you. No, he instantly does this, and everybody sees her. She's bent over, she straightens up, and everybody's like, wow, she has been like this ever since I can remember. She has been like this for like 18 years, and everybody recognizes this. But the leader of the synagogue, ultra religious guy, was indignant, which is a super fancy word he is ticked off about it, right? He is filled with anger because of what Jesus had just done. Why? Because Jesus had healed on the Sabbath. Now, if you have followed along with Jesus, or you've followed along with this as we've been going through the book of Luke, and actually this something similar is going to happen again next week, and when you see, you know, when you read about Jesus, you realize that this kind of stuff happens a lot. It's like Jesus goes and he breaks these religious guys' rules, almost like, I don't know, just to use it as a teaching moment. And so here again, Jesus knows, right? It's not like he's like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't realize it that you had this rule and didn't mean to offend you. It's not what Jesus is doing. Here's Jesus, he knows exactly the issue that this is going to cause, yet he has compassion on this lady and he heals her anyway. See, Jesus had just broken one of their religious rules, which in their culture was a huge thing. See, what they did, and it actually started good, this whole idea of honoring the Sabbath. First of all, it's a Ten Commandment, people, okay? All right, so it's kind of a big deal. And this all comes from the Old Testament. In fact, God sets the standard for our life all the way back in creation, all right, before we were even here. And so what the Bible tells us, what God tells us, is that he has designed us to have a specific rhythm in our life. And that rhythm is, we work hard for 6 days a week, and then we completely rest one. And we do this every single week. It's a cycle. It's something that we should be striving to do. All right? Now, a lot of us, we've never done that. Right? A lot of us, we've never rested. A lot of us, we've never worked hard. All right? A lot of us, like we got people on both ends here. And for some of us, it's like, you know, you're just like stressed out and you're weighed down with anxiety and worry and just all this stuff. I'm just saying, God knows us pretty well since he designed us and he gives us this rhythm for our life. Maybe that's your problem. Maybe what a lot of us end up doing, especially within our culture, is we kind of dink around for 7 days a week. Every single week, we're like kind of working. We're not really working hard, but we also don't rest at all. That's an issue. We're to work hard 6 days a week, completely rest one day a week. It's the rhythm that God has given us in our life, and it's the rhythm that he demonstrated in creation in the first week. And so these people, they knew that, these religious guys. And so they were like, okay, we need to keep the Sabbath holy. All right, this is a rule. It's something that God tells us to do. Again, it's in the Ten Commandments. It's in the Old Testament. And so they were like, well, we need to kind of define some terms here. All right, we need to figure out like what exactly work is. And so these religious people, they created rule after rule after rule so that they wouldn't come close to breaking God's rule. And so they had all these rules of like what work could be considered. Stuff that was so intense, like you had to, on the Sabbath, you would count your steps. Because if you took too many steps, well, that God might consider that as work. And then, you know, maybe you would have broken God's command. They had things like you couldn't spit in the dirt. You could spit on a rock. That's cool. But in the dirt, that's not cool because in the dirt, you're technically making mud. And technically, maybe God might consider that as work. And so that's an issue. Right, you could light, or you weren't allowed to light a candle on the Sabbath because technically that might be considered as building a fire, and building a fire, God technically might say that is work on the Sabbath, and so you weren't allowed to light a candle. And if you did have a candle that was burning from yesterday, that's totally cool. You could keep that candle burning. You could use it. You could do all this stuff. All right, but if that candle fell over and your house caught on fire, technically, because you weren't allowed to work, you weren't allowed to carry anything on the Sabbath. And so you weren't, like, if you had clothes or something, you weren't allowed to carry your clothes out. But these religious leaders, they had a bunch of, like, loopholes, which I'm a big loophole fan, okay? So if you got them, you might as well use them. And so they would say, you can't carry your clothes out of your house that's burning down, but you can layer up. You know what I'm talking about? You can walk out with all your layers of clothes. That's okay, because technically that's not work because you're not carrying it, even though you are. All right, so there's all this stuff. Okay, they had all these crazy rules. You weren't allowed to help anybody physically unless it was a life or death situation. And so in this situation, she's been like this for 18 years. It's obviously she's not going to die from it. And so they have all these rules. Does that sound relaxing to you? All right, you don't want to count your steps on your vacation? You know, or on your day of rest, right? That's the kind of thing that these people did. And so these were well-intentioned religious people who loved their rules. By the way, that's what religion is. I feel like I've been talking about this a lot lately. And maybe some of you guys are like, you do, all right? A lot. All right, but this is what Jesus talks about day in and day out. Seems like it's his main thing. And so it keeps coming up as we study through the book of Luke. But Jesus was against religion, right? What is religion? Religion, I've said this a whole bunch. Religion is literally, if you want to break it down to exactly like the basis of what it is, religion is a bunch of do's and don'ts. It's a bunch of rules. It's a bunch of do's and don'ts that you have to do or not do in order to appease God and to get his affection. And so someday we think that this is, I don't know why we think this, but this is kind of how we generally think. Same thing back then, is that we think that we're going to die, which you will, and God's going to look at us and he's going to say, wow, look at all your good things. Wow, you have so much good stuff. You are so religious. You did all those religious things. I'm so proud of you. I really need you on my team. And so why don't you come with me? I'll take you to heaven, okay? Like, that's what we think is going to happen. Or maybe he'll look at our good stuff and our bad stuff and say, well, your good stuff outweighs your bad stuff, so you're pretty good. Okay, why don't you come on in? That is not what happens. That is not reality. I don't know where we even get that stuff, right? This guy loves his rules. This guy loves his religion. And here's Jesus ruining his church service. And so he's all ticked off. And so he responds by telling the crowd, which is so, it's so passive aggressive. You get what I'm saying? You know people like that? All right, he doesn't address Jesus, who he's mad at. He addresses the crowd, hoping that Jesus will hear how he addresses the crowd. And this is what he says. He says, excuse me, Jesus. Hey, everybody, there are 6 days when work should be done. Therefore, come on those days and be healed and not on the Sabbath day. Don't come today. This is a Sabbath. He says, but Jesus answered him and he said, you hypocrite. All right? And it's plural, so there's multiple of these religious people leaning up, you know, back against the wall, watching Jesus, judging him. He says, you hypocrites. Doesn't each one of you untie his ox or donkey from the feeding trough on the Sabbath and lead it to water? Right? See, the religious leaders had this rule that you could, again, they had like loopholes for everything, that you could take care of your animal on Sabbath so your animal wouldn't die, and so you have to give it water and stuff. So technically that might be work, but God will overlook that because you're taking care of an animal. Like, this is kind of the thought process and all this stuff. And so here's Jesus. He's just pointing out logically. He's saying, hey, you have all these exceptions for you, from your work rules that you created for your animals, but not for people. He says, Satan has bound this woman, a daughter of Abraham, let me remind you, all right, somebody who was created after God's own image for 18 long years. And shouldn't she be untied, just like you would untie an animal and how that's okay, from this bondage on the Sabbath day? right? And so what Jesus is doing is he is challenging their religion. He is challenging their rules. And what you got to understand is that the whole crowd is in shock. I mean, everybody's just like, you have got to be kidding me. Like, Jesus is about to get, like, he's in trouble. Like, this is not good. Everybody, they cannot believe that Jesus is doing this. You got this new celebrity, this, like, young Jesus guy who doesn't have the degrees and who doesn't have the schooling. And he is questioning these religious leaders in their own synagogue and in their own church in front of everybody. All right, this is crazy. And when he had said these things, it says all of his adversaries, all these top religious guys were humiliated, but the whole crowd was rejoicing over all the glorious things that he was doing. And it was things like this. Jesus' popularity was growing and growing. It had been growing at this point for about 2 years. I mean, he's out there teaching against religion, but he seems, in our point of view, seems very religious. And everybody wants to see this Jesus guy, and everybody wants to see the things that he is doing. And remember, as we talked about last week, thousands and thousands of people are showing up to hear the things that Jesus had to say. But Jesus keeps moving. It says he went through one town and village after another, teaching and making his way to Jerusalem. Yeah, one person got it. Okay, Jerusalem. He's been going there for the last few weeks. All right, you guys with me? Okay, all right. He's been going there the last 2 weeks. He's making his way to Jerusalem. And at one point, somebody in the crowd shouts out to Jesus. And he says, hey, Jesus, got a quick question for you. Real quick. Are only a few people going to be saved? He's like, so, Jesus, is there only going to be a few of us? And I'm guessing maybe the guy's kind of looking around at the people, you know, the crowd that's following Jesus. He's like, you know, there's a whole population of earth. Like, is this it? Like, is it just us, like our crew here? Like us that are following you? And really the main focus of his question is he's saying how many? How many people get to go to heaven? Is it like a lot? Is it like a little? Like, is it just us? Like, what will the population of heaven actually look like? You know, what's the deal with heaven, Jesus? And Jesus looks at him, and he says, well, good question, I guess, but how about you? He says, you need to make every effort to enter through the narrow door. And everybody standing there, even this guy, they're all like, what are you talking about, door? Right, narrow door. What are you bringing up a door for? I'm talking about, I was asking you how many people are going to be in heaven. Do you ever notice, as we've been going through Luke, that there's a lot of times where somebody will ask Jesus a question, and he doesn't actually come out and answer it straightforward. You notice that? Right, it happens all the time. And he's using this question to make a point, is what Jesus is doing. All right, Jesus doesn't say, yeah, man, not many. Yeah, it's going to be a rough crowd in heaven. Okay, if you really even want to call it a crowd, all right, it's not what he says. Here's Jesus. It's almost like he's saying, hey, don't worry about how few. You need to worry about you. He says, make every effort, meaning do whatever you have to do to be one who gets in. It's almost like Jesus is saying, hey, you know what heaven is like? All right, picture it like a narrow door. All right, picture it like a narrow door. That's kind of how it's like. Now, a few months ago, I was in Mexico. All right, I think I told you guys about this, where me and a buddy of mine, he had this old car that he was just going to junk and take it to a junkyard and sell it for scrap. And then we were talking, and we were like, hey, let's just drive it like on one last road trip, like last hurrah for this thing. And so we just started driving south, and we thought we had wherever it died, that's where it was going to die. We'd fly back. That was our plan. Okay, so we were thinking like Kentucky, like if it made it out of Ohio, we'd be good. And we ended up in Belize, okay? So that was a lot farther than we expected. And at one point, we're just like, well, you know, we got to get out of here. Like, we got to go home, like this thing. And it's still hopefully driving the streets of Mexico to this day. That's what I hope is. Wish we would put one of those like things in there that you could track it. Really bummed out we didn't do that. Anyway, so but on the way, we stopped at some ancient ruins called Palenque in central Mexico. And this place was sweet, all right? It's about 3,700 acres of like that was once just a huge, massive city. And so they've uncovered some things. All this stuff was like underground. It had been filled up over 1,000 years or however long it had been with like dirt and trees. And like the jungle kind of took this place back over. And so we went and we toured around this place. And just these buildings here are the only ones that they've uncovered. Again, there's 3,700 acres of jungle. And it was all at one point city. And it's still there. It's just underneath the dirt. And so when we get there, we kind of had two options. They were like, hey, you could go and you can explore the jungle on your own, which is awesome, or you can hire a guide, which is going to cost you a little bit money. And about that point, we could hear off in the distance, they had these things called howling monkeys, and it sounds like an angry grizzly bear, like in the bush next over. And so we're like, I think we'll hire a guide, you know? And so we hired a guy after a little negotiating, and we kind of walked into the jungle and we stayed out there for a while, and he's just kind of showing us around. He's showing us like the normal things, like tarantulas and which waterfalls to drink from, and he's showing us how to eat termites, which didn't taste very good at all. And he showed us like plants, like we're walking underneath plants with like giant spikes, and he's like, oh yeah, don't touch that because it's got poison on it and that will kill you, like that type of thing. And I'm like, I'm so glad that we didn't come out here on our own, because I don't think we'd make it back. And we'd been like, you know, the plants would have killed us. Like, that's what would have happened. That would have been so embarrassing. Went down by plant, you know. And so at one point, we're walking around, and we're walking through the jungle, and this guy, our guide, he just says, hey, you should go through that door right there. And we're looking, I'm like, I don't see a door, you know. And there's just mounds of hills and stuff everywhere, which are actually buildings underneath. And he's like, no, there's a door right there. And sure enough, as you look through the trees and through the vines, sure enough, there was a small, narrow door. And he's like, yeah, you go in there and check it out. I've been in there before. You know, it's a bunch of like passageways underground. Technically, it's a building that the jungle is kind of taken over. He's like, you could go in there and you could go check it out. And so I did that. I squeezed through this door, and I walked around, and sure enough, it was just like he said. There's a bunch of like little hallways of stone that you go like deep into the ground, and it was pretty awesome, except for the bats flying around my head. Everything else was good, and I just start thinking about like thinking back to that. You know, if we didn't have the guide, there is no chance that we would ever have noticed that narrow door. Like, we just would never have noticed that. We wouldn't have known that that was there. See, for a lot of us, we don't like the idea of heaven, like the entrance to heaven, as being like a narrow door like that. We don't like that. We think of heaven as like wide gates, let everybody in, like everybody gets to go. We're all on different paths up the mountain, but we're all leading to the same place. Like, that's kind of how we think. But Jesus is like, no, heaven's like a narrow door. And the question is like, why so narrow? We don't like that word narrow. Like, it's kind of, I don't know, it's like kind of offensive. It's like narrow-minded. It just doesn't seem fair. And we naturally think this way. You know why? Because we're all raised in our culture. In our culture, it's constantly telling us and constantly preaching to us that we are to be open-minded in everything. Right? That's what our culture teaches us. That's what we learn, you know, ever since we're like in preschool. And many times, if we're completely honest with ourselves, many times being open-minded is a good thing, right? I mean, it's a good thing to be open-minded on things. Think about it. We live in a time of like endless choices. If you want groceries, you go to Walmart. You can kind of pick out anything that you want. If you don't like Walmart, you could go to Aldi. If you don't like Aldi, you could totally go to Kroger. If you don't like Kroger, you go to like IGA or something, okay? And so there's all these options. If you're hungry, right, you can basically, here in Tempe, you can pick out basically whatever food you want. If you want a burrito, you could go to Taco Bell. If you don't like Taco Bell, you could go to Chipotle. If you don't like Chipotle, you could go to Casa Express, okay? All right, you have options. If you need a new car, all right, you could go get a Dodge. You could go get a Ford. If you don't like either of those, you could go get a Chevy. If you don't like that, you could go get a Toyota. And here's the Bible saying, hey, if you don't like Jesus, all right, the Bible says, tough. He is the only way. By the way, being narrow-minded, can we just all admit that it's not always that's not always a bad thing? I don't know about you, but like, I don't like flying in general. Like, I don't like being cramped in that seat. You walk on the plane, already smells like plane, you know what I mean? And you're like, this air, it's just heavy. Like, it's been breathed in like 100 times, you know what I mean? I know it's supposed to be filtered and all that stuff, but I'm like, why does it smell that way then, all right? And so I'm not a big fan of flying. And you know, it'd be like for me, like, I don't want an open-minded pilot. You know what I'm talking about? Like, I just don't. It's not what I'm interested in. You know, as we're in the air, we're getting ready to land. Like, I don't want the pilot coming over the speakers and be like, this is your captain speaking. I just communicated with the tower, and they says we need to stay up here for about 15 minutes or so. Then they will get us in line, and we'll get ready to land, and we'll all be good. But I'm thinking a little open-minded today. And so I'm thinking we just go for it. And whatever happens, happens. I think we'll be all right. Okay? Like, I'm not into that. That's not something I want to hear from my pilot. None of us in this room, do we want an open-minded surgeon, right? Like, we want somebody who's focused, all right? We want somebody who's narrow-minded, all right? We don't want, after the surgery, to be like, okay, doc, how are we looking in there? And he's like, well, I fixed your issue, but then I started, like, poking around and stuff, and I think I dropped my Tic Tac in there at some point, like that type of thing. Like, we don't want to hear that from our surgeon. We don't want an open-minded surgeon. See, many times, narrow-minded is good for us. And so we shouldn't be offended by a narrow door. We should be unbelievably thankful that he made a door. See, he says, many. Part of me this week, as I'm looking at that, I'm like, why do you have to use that word? Why can't it be just to say some or a few? Problem is that it's not a few. He says, many will try to enter that narrow door and won't be able. He says, once the homeowner, and this is God in this instant, gets up and shuts the door. He's like, you can't get in if the door is shut. And the whole crowd, and probably even some of us here today, we're just like, well, shuts the door. Why is he shutting the door? Why is the door closed? Wait, what? What's he doing? And here's Jesus. He's saying, yeah, I want you to understand, the door won't be open forever. Like, right now, we got this, like, sweet spot where we got this, like, open enrollment type thing going on. All right, but it will close, and it will not reopen. And so here he's saying the door will be closed, and then you. And part of me is like, why do you have to say you? This is kind of offensive. What he's doing is he's making it personal. So it'd be like him on stage here today saying, you will stand on the outside and knock on the door, and you will say stuff like, Lord, open up for us. Lord, let me in. All right? Lord, you're trying to get in, and he will answer you saying, I don't know you, and I don't even know where you're from. See, it's a sad reality where he's saying, there's a lot of people who will be knocking on that door, but you ain't getting through. See, someday, every single one of us, we will be dead. And some of us, he's saying, will be so confident that we will be able to get into heaven. But when we die, that's it. It's final. Our decision, whatever decision that we made here on earth, that decision is made, meaning the door is closed. And he's saying these people will claim to have a relationship with the owner, but in reality, they don't have one. And so here's God, the owner. He looks at them as strangers, and he's just like, I don't know you guys. I don't know who you are, but they'll say, yeah, you do. I think you do. All right, we ate and drank in your presence. We hung out with you, Jesus, and you taught on our streets. See, the problem with these people is that these people are familiar with Jesus, but they don't know him. They know of him. They know all about him. But they don't know him. See, the reality is this is the majority of church-going people in our community. It's this. See, I talk to people all the time. We talk about this a lot where, and some of you, it's been you, all right? We've had this conversation where I talk to people and they're like, they know a little bit about Jesus, like they've been to church, you know, maybe even all their life, and they like the idea of Jesus, of course. They like the idea of, like, God coming to save them, and they totally believe that Jesus existed. But it's all religion to them. It's all a bunch of do's and don'ts to them. And when you dig down deep, there's just no relationship there. They don't know him. See, they never truly invited Jesus into their life, and they're still doing life on their own. That's what religion is. Religion is you're not putting your trust in Jesus. You're putting your trust in yourself and your good stuff. See, it's like the people trying to get into the home here, into heaven. See, we think being familiar with Jesus is good enough. Jesus is like, man, it's not. We think doing a bunch of religious stuff is good enough. And Jesus is like, it ain't. See, here, God replies. And for the first time in your life, if it's you, there will be honesty between you and Jesus. And he will tell you, I don't know you. And I don't know where you're from. Get away from me, all you evildoers. And then he says, there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth in that place. He's describing hell here. And when you see Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, some Old Testament guys, and all the prophets in the kingdom of God, meaning heaven, but you yourselves will be thrown out. Doesn't that freak you out? Doesn't it? That should freak you out, man. That should freak you out. Here's God of the universe saying, hey, just want to let you know, I want to warn you guys real quick. Heaven, real place, is awesome. Hell is a real place too. And many of you will try to get to heaven, but will be turned away. And many will think that they are totally in because they are familiar with Jesus. But that relationship actually never began. It never existed. That should freak you out. That should make you question yourself, is what it's doing. And I think the people that Jesus is talking to in this crowd on this very day, I think they are feeling the same feeling that we should be thinking here today. Here's a bunch of people who think they're going to heaven, but to their surprise, they will be going to hell forever. So here's this guy who started this question. He's saying, hey, Jesus, is it just us? I can't wait for heaven, man. It's going to be awesome. Is this like us? Like all of us here? It's going to be sweet. And here's Jesus. He's like, no, you don't understand. Not even all of you are in. Not even all of you have a relationship with me. See, it's like almost like Jesus saying, hey, man, you're asking how many? Your problem is you're asking the wrong question. The question is, are you? See, it's similar to what Jesus says in Matthew chapter 7. We've talked about this before. This was at a different time to a different group of people. He says, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father in heaven, meaning only the one who has given their life to me and has chosen to live their life the way that I have called them to live. And on that day, again, he uses the word many. It's not like there's going to be a few people, I feel really bad for them. He said, many will say to me, Lord, Lord. So they believe in Jesus, all right? They believe that Jesus is God, all right? He says, didn't we prophesy in your name? Didn't we drive out demons in your name? Didn't we do all these miracles in your name? So they're doing stuff better than what I've ever done. All right, they got some pretty good stuff racked up here. All right, this is, again, religion. It's a bunch of good things that they think is good enough to get them in. They think they've earned their way into heaven. And then he says, I, Jesus, will announce to them, yeah, but you've done some good stuff. I get that. But I never knew you. You never chose to have a relationship with me. I wanted you to. But you never chose to. And so you have to depart from me. You lawbreakers. See, there's people who have an emotional connection with Jesus. They respect Jesus, sure. They believe in God. They're cool with God. They recognize Jesus as God. They believe he exists. They do a bunch of good stuff. These are like good people. All right, these people have some impressive resumes, all right, on their heaven resume. And God's saying he never knew them. He's saying there's no relationship there. And again, look at these people. This comes at a complete surprise for them. They're like, whoa, whoa, Jesus, I went to church every week for you. I went on mission trips. I gave to the church. I served in the church. I was a really nice person. I tried to love everybody around me. All right, I was baptized. I prayed. I read the Bible maybe every day. I listened to your teaching. I tried to become a better person. And it's like these people are just like, I was an above average religious person. Look at my resume, Jesus. I think you missed it. Just let me just check it out. Just read a few things. I know so much about you. See, it's not about knowing about God. It's about knowing him. See, having a good resume doesn't get you into heaven. Mm-mm. It's not how it works. A relationship does. See, we tend to add Jesus to a resume. We tend to, like, check Jesus off the box for a lot of us. We put our trust in Jesus. Sure. All right, that sounds good. I put my trust in Jesus and my baptism. I put my trust in Jesus and I do communion or my church attendance or I'm a really good person. All right, it's not Jesus and. It is only Jesus. He is the only way to get to heaven. And here he is. It's the only way to get into heaven is by making a conscious decision to invite him into our life. I think the best word maybe is to surrender to him. That's when our relationship with God starts. It doesn't just happen. It's a decision that we have to make. And it happens in a moment. And those that refuse to make that decision, the many that Jesus says here, I think they're good people by our standards. They just put it off. They're not like atheists where it's like, I don't believe in God, and they completely rebel against them. I think most of these people, they just kind of put it off and start living their life. And they're distracted by all these other things going around. I mean, those people who are here, I'm just saying, is people who are in this room that will fall into this category. We just kind of end up fooling ourselves into thinking we're good and we're not. See, Jesus makes it clear. Those people go to a place called hell, and then that place, unfortunately for us, is real. See, just because you hung out with Jesus, just because you go to church sometimes, doesn't mean that you're walking through that door. I mean, I think Judas is a good example of that, right? Like Judas was as close as you could get to Jesus. I mean, he hung out with Jesus for like 3 years. He was one of his top 12 guys. He didn't get to go through that door. I told you today was tough, right? Yeah. See, we want to believe, or we want to feel the feeling of love. We want to feel the comfort of Jesus. We like the good feeling of going to church and feeling, you know, the good feeling of like security and like, oh, I'm working on myself, you know, like gotta keep working, like I'm doing good, and the desire to be good people and stuff. But we don't want to experience the giving up of control of our lives to Jesus. That's our issue. We want to be generous, sure, but on our terms, right? We want that reputation that God tells us we should have, but we want to do it on our terms. We want to be loving, but we want to do it on our terms. And it's like we have this inner desire inside for religion. It's like we have this inner desire to earn our way to heaven by being what we deem as good. And the problem is, 2,000 years ago, Jesus, he steps on the scene. He says, oh yeah, by the way, it's not about religion. It's not about following your rules. All right, it's about a relationship with your creator. Religion will get you to the door, but it doesn't get you inside. And so my question is obvious. How sure are you that you're not one of the many? How confident are you that you're not one of the many who will watch the door close and you'll watch heaven slip away? That should freak you out. That should bother you. As I'm going through this week, I'm like, am I sure? You know, I'm like thinking through, and I'm in the same boat as you. Just because I'm a pastor doesn't mean nothing. I'm like, am I sure? And for me, what reassures me, and I've talked to some of you guys about this, what reassures me is I could think back to the moment that I know I made that decision. I don't know what day it was. I don't know the date. I don't know what day of week it was. I don't even know the words that I said. But I do remember the moment, and I remember exactly where I was, and I remember the feeling before, and I remember making that decision, and I remember the feeling after. And the feeling after was like relief. That's what I remember years and years and years ago. And so for me, I can look back, and I'm like, am I sure? Like, I'm not doubting God. No, I'm doubting myself. Am I sure I made that decision? Am I sure that I'm good? And what I do is I can think back to that moment. I can think, well, I know I made that decision at that point. I'm not sure about before, but I know I did then. And so my question is, I don't know, this might not be 100%, but if you can't think of a moment that you made, let's say the most important decision of your entire life that eternity lays in the balance of, just saying, I think that's probably something that you should probably remember, right? Logically. If you can't think back to that moment, dude, I'd be doubting. How do you know then that you're not one of the many? I'm just saying, I don't know. How do you know? If you're not 100% sure, I would not want to live life being 90% sure that I'm going to heaven. Like 10% chance that I might go to hell forever. Like that, you know, who wants to live like that? You could be 100%. Jesus says, all you got to do is you just got to place your trust in him. And it's like a surrendering to him. Again, I think that's the best word. And if you haven't done that, you should do that today. Because guess what? you aren't guaranteed tomorrow. He doesn't owe you tomorrow. You haven't earned tomorrow in any way. You should take care of that. Super simple, right? God, he's not trying to trip us up. It's not, oh, well, you got to follow all these rules. And it's going to take you a while. It's not what it's about. It's not like, oh, I've done so much bad stuff. I don't know if I could catch up with good stuff. It's not what it's about. It's not about good or bad. It's about us coming to God and simply, formally, it's you going to God and just saying, hey, God, I want you in my life. I need you, and I need what you did for me 2,000 years ago on that cross when you paid for every single thing that I've done, that I'm doing, and that I'm going to do wrong. You paid for it all, and I need you in my life, and I'm surrendering my life to you. That's it. It's not a bunch of check marks that you got to check. It's simple. It's easy. And in that moment, the Bible says that God moves into your life. And he looks at you as a different person. So if you're not sure that you've done that, you should do that today to avoid the situation that Jesus is talking about. Let's pray. God, we thank you for these words. And some of this stuff, it's tough. Like, this is not a fun one. It's something that really gets us thinking, got me thinking this week. But you talked about this more than once. This is an important thing. God, we ask that if there's anybody here that they are not 100% sure, if they don't know that they know that they know that they know that they will be with you someday, that they would make that right today, that they will begin that relationship. It's the most important thing, most important decision that we could ever make in our entire life. It's not just knowing about you. It's knowing you. And God, we thank you for that. And we thank you for dying for us. You didn't have to do that. For some reason, you love us enough that you chose to. God, we thank you for that. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, we'll see you guys.